Max just showed up one day, or I think called or emailed and said, you know, he's, and that happens a lot, and a lot of times I kind of, you know, because life is full, and there was just something about Fox that I wanted to meet him. And so he sent me his book, and this is really, if you don't have it yet, get it today, because sometimes we don't want to read poetry more than once, but I find that the more I read it, the deeper it gets, and I love the art in it. So, but let me tell you that those of you that don't know Fox, because it looks like there's some friends of his in the room, is that Fox is a Spanish teacher at Whippany Park High School since 2005. And the last 9 years, he has spent at the bench coach for the Somerset Patriots of the Atlantic League of Professional Baseball. In January is when he published his book, and it's called Letter Kindling, great title, Igniting, Inspiring, and Evolving the Fire Within. And since then, he's been moving around, lecturing and speaking and just giving accounts of what it's been like for him to grow up with, living with, and working with cerebral palsy. So let's give a warm Morristown welcome.
Thanks, everybody. I'm going to play this video first, and then I'll be good. Forgot to plug it in. Screen rotation. Light. Get out of the way, Fox.
Thank you, Darcy. If the Gamecock baseball team ever needs a little inspiration, it doesn't have to look very far. News IQ's like Ned Andrews tells us about one courageous young man in his field of dreams. John Porto!
One, but he's definitely my number one. He's the most positive, strongest individual I've ever met.
My name is Fox Beyer, and this is my story. I was born 2 months premature. In the beginning, it didn't look good in terms of my survival. And I was given, from what I'm told, a 25% chance to live. And then as my condition improved in the weeks after I was born, my father decided to name me Fox because he felt like I had outsmarted all the doctors. I had great, great support growing up. I grew up about half an hour from here in Chatham, New Jersey, a nice little town in Morris County. I have three siblings. I have an older brother, a younger brother, and a younger sister. And some of my first memories with all of them was playing baseball in the backyard. One day, the director of this program at MSG Network, Mike Quick, called me and said, Fox, knowing that I was a big Yankee fan, that I was going to throw out the first pitch to a Yankees game, the first person I actually meet is Derek Jeter. I shake his hand, and one of the first things he says is, don't bounce this pitch. Wade Boggs was great. At the time, he had a sister with MS, so we sort of connected that way.
Let's give a big hand to a most courageous athlete, Fox Beyer.
It was not a strike, and I also remember TV Network, who was doing a piece on me, had a cameraman behind home plate. I threw out the first pitch, and I twirled around, and I tipped my cap, and this man laughed so hard that he fell backwards with the camera, so there's no footage from behind home plate of me actually throwing out the first pitch because of that. Met Brett in college. We'd have a lot of chats on the bus on the way to class, and that's how we first got acquainted with each other. I majored in history and in Spanish. I went back for an extra year to get my degree in Spanish, and during that year, when I was a coach on the baseball team at the University of South Carolina, we went to the College World Series. One day, I knew Brett was here as the pitching coach. So I called him one day and he said, sure, come on out. Came out a bunch of times in 07 and 08. I got a uniform, and fortunately, I've stuck ever since. Luckiest guy on earth.
That was a strike.
This organization cares about the players more than anywhere that I've seen. We're very much a family. I truly believe there is no other place like this on earth. I've been a Spanish teacher at Whippany Park High School for the past 12 years. All I try to do there is give them the same great experience that I had growing up. I coached baseball and volleyball at Whippany Park for 7 or 8 years, and again, I'm teaching them about life. I submitted a manuscript to a publishing company, and luckily within a couple of days they offered me a deal. Memorized a lot of the poems, and I go around coffee shops, ice cream parlors, libraries, anywhere that will take me, and I recite these poems. My ultimate goal is to affect as many people as I can in a positive way. I do want to pursue public speaking more, possibly as a career, and I want to do it in a way where I'm really completely honest and giving my heart to the audience, but doing it in a way that that's meaningful and understandable.
All right, Mr. Fox Meyer!
Let's give a big hand to a most courageous athlete, Fox Meyer.
My name is Fox Meyer, and this is my story.
So yeah, that's my name.
Is it on? It's on, yeah. So I don't have to yell. So many of you know me, some of you don't. So my name is Fox, like the animal, F-O-X, and there have been some very interesting interpretations of my name throughout time, meaning one day I ordered some pizza over the phone, and she asked, "What's your name?" And I said, "Fox, F-O-X." I always spell it after I say it. But I guess she didn't hear me, because when I got the pizza box was written on it, S-O-C-K-S. Who, does anybody here know anybody with the last name Sox? First name, I didn't think so. And then, I don't mention it in there, but in the year 2000, I helped coach a baseball team in Eatonton, North Carolina. And I lived with a house mother there named Ruth, and I lived with my friend Stuart, who was the manager on that team, and I would go before games during the day to a beach to read, because I love the beach and I like to read. And one day Stuart got home and I was not there, and he asked Ruth, "Where is he?" And Ruth said, "Frog is at the beach." She called me Frog. Anywho, so what I'm going to do today, right now, for the next hour or so, is tell my story. I'm going to narrate a day in my life, because Ms. Karen, you've asked me a number of times, what's it like? And every time I think, I don't know. I started this whole book thing by reciting these poems from this book. And then my sister's boyfriend grabbed me at my brother's wedding and said, "Hey, dude, I'm a speaker. You are good. Reciting these poems are great, but you know what people are wondering about you?" I said, "What?" He said, "They're wondering why it takes you four times as long to get up on stage. So why don't you tell them about it?" So I'm going to do that. So go along with me. I'm a teacher at Whitney Park High School, among other things. So this is my perspective, a typical day. And I go back in my mind and I recite some poems from the book. And pretty much all of you are involved in this story. So are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's 6 a.m. The alarm clock on my iPad mini goes off. While I am very happy for this gift, my Somerset Patriot family, I know the alarm clock on my iPad mini is not its primary intended use, so naturally, I want to punch it. But I don't. What do? I hit snooze twice in the next 10 minutes. And then I hear Coach Tanner's voice in my head, "Boy, off your butt and on your feet, gotta get up so we can eat." So I oblige, and I begin to put my right leg on the ground. As I do this, I see a scar on my hip that goes all the way up to my hip. It's product of a 1984 and 1988 hip osteotomy surgery, which my surgeon inserted a metal rod in both my hips, breaking them, all in the effort that I'd walk less, not kneed.
Well, then I put my left leg on the ground. And the first thing that happens is my knees kiss together for the first of many times that day. I look down at my knees and say, boy, you boys have really gotten to know each other well in the past bunch of years. CP is relentless. Captive of my body, this thing has got me. Sitting here in this chair, so begins the unfair. Thought so by some, blind, deaf, and dumb. Did he hear that sound, and how is he getting around? Listen, my crossed eyes gave me x-ray vision in disguise. From my first ectomy to my last otomy, my scars are my gift. I walk to the bathroom. As I do this, I pick my feet up just high enough up off the ground so I don't trip and fall flat on my face. Each step carries with it a memory. This time, it's the sound a morphine machine makes. As I lie in bed, my body sliced after my hamstring transfer surgery in 1990. I get into the bathroom and step into the shower. As I do this, I hold on to things more than gently because I've had falls before and I want to keep my teeth. I bathe. And as I bathe, I see all my scars, and each scar carries with it a memory. Heel cord extension, hamstring transfer, hip osteotomy, testicle removal, chest tube. I get out of the shower, again, holding on things more than gently because I want to keep my teeth. I towel off and I groom myself. And the last thing that I do is I put my contact lenses into my eyes. And I'm reminded once again that I cannot focus on a single object with both eyes at the same time. Product of being cross-eyed at birth, various eye surgeries, and playing baseball at grandma's house. I step back and I see myself in the mirror. It's 6:30 in the a.m. and the snooze has become my friend. Soon I see myself in the mirror. He looks back at me and says, Fox, have you done all you can do and are you ready for what is to come? Are you thankful for all you have been given? As would say, decent son, do you realize the responsibility that comes with the pleasure of success? You must be a man of integrity to always be at your best. And no matter there are no cameras, I meant you are alone under this roof. You can hide sometimes from the outside world, but I always see the truth. I walk out of the bathroom to go into my bedroom to get dressed. Once again, picking up my feet just high enough up off the ground so I don't fall flat on my face. Each step carries with it a memory. This time, it's a few days post-surgery in 1988 of my hip osteotomy. My legs, broken at the hip and sliced at the hip, are not casted yet. They're only bandaged. My surgeon says, Fox, it's time to put weight on your feet. With my dad holding me from behind, I take my first steps post-surgery. And while it's very hard to describe the pain that came with each step, it's impossible to describe the euphoria of walking again. I sit down to get dressed. As a general rule, this takes me 4 times as long as it does for the average bear. No big deal, but the hardest part is putting on and tying my shoes. I do this with my left foot with a few problems. The right, it's much harder. And as I do this, I look out into the parking lot, and guess what? I see my neighbor. Get to his car and bend down and tie his shoe in 2 seconds flat. I sigh and I look to my left and I can picture my mother telling me as a kindergartner, Fox, you have CP, you just walk funny. Mom again has a point. I can't help but think in this moment, the millions of people that have it harder than I do for millions of reasons. Take Andre, for example. Andre was my roommate in rehab after my hamstring transfer in 1990. At 21 years old, Andre was given a motorcycle for his birthday. He took it out for a ride without his helmet on. He went over a patch of wet leaves, and the first thing he hit was his head. So in those days, Andre stood in front of me without any access to his long-term or short-term memory and was prone to violent mood swings. For example, his mother would walk in one day and he'd be lovey-dovey, kissing on her, hugging on her the whole day. The next day she'd walk in and he'd say, "Fox, who is this B-I-T-C-H trying to enter the room?" It was also Jerry, my roommate there as well. At 16, Jerry, in the middle of the day, got on his bicycle to get groceries for his mother. He was hit by a drunk cab driver. Jerry, too, had no access to his long-term or short-term memory and was prone to violent mood swings. So guess what? I think I can tie my shoe. I do this. I stand up and I stare straight ahead. And I think about, during this day, how many times the perception of me will get mixed up with the actual reality. I think about the seventh grade in gym class. We're timed going around the track. And in the locker room, a classmate is going around comparing his times with theirs. He gets to me. I begin to say my time. He says, "Fox, you don't count." In that moment, I stand up and I say, "Don't tell me what I can and cannot do. To my image, I'm defiant. What you see is so far from true. I'm a mental giant. I'm frail, built like a nicknamed scarecrow. Inside, what a lot do not know. I have been broken and welded so many times. I can't tell you this, no matter how hard I try. Misjudged book and misread cover. I'll tell you what lies under. My toes are curled, my body wants to go fetal. In my life, I have seen so many needles. I pick up my legs to run, you know, like kids do just for fun. But I've got to be careful because every step could lead to a tumble. This I can't forget. In front of my face, my eyes. Specks for ears, they can't disguise. My pupils are never in sync, no matter how hard I try and think. But don't tell me what I can and cannot do. To my image, I'm defiant. What you see is so far from true because I'm a mental giant." I walk out the door to get to my car. Each step carries with it a memory. This time, it's a few days post-surgery of my hamstring transfer in 1990. And I'm lying in a hospital bed, sliced, in the middle of muscle spasms. And my surgeon, Dr. Roy Nuzzo, walks in, dressed in plaid from head to toe. And he's doing all these weird coordination exercises, like tapping his head, rubbing his stomach. Anybody do that right now? I can't right now. So imagine my body's all sliced up and he's going, "Meh, Doc, are you serious?" Well, anyway, he asks me, "Fox, how are you doing? Good?" I have never told a bigger lie in my life when I said, "Yeah, Doc, I'm doing great." To get to my car, I have to go down a flight of stairs. CP does not make this easy. But again, I can't help but think of the millions of people who have it tougher than I do for millions of reasons. Take Reggie, for instance. Reggie, again, was my roommate in rehab in 1990. At 14 years old, he stole a car. He drove it into a telephone pole. So in those days, he was paralyzed from the waist down. There was Michael. At 15 years old, Michael walked into his parents' bedroom at night and said, "Mom and Dad, I have a headache." He passed out. He had a brain aneurysm. So in those days, Michael lied in front of me, in a diaper and a coma, unable to move, unable to talk. So yeah, I think I can get down these stairs. I hold on to rails to keep from flying. Man, you know I ain't lying. Sometimes I laugh to keep from crying. Hips entangled, legs entangled, knees entangled, feet so entangled. I get into my car, this time right leg first. And no, I don't see my scars because, well, people, I'm wearing long pants. I back out and I begin to drive, and somewhere along my drive to work, I make a left-hand turn, and a baseball rolls out of a glove in my trunk. That glove was given to me by Brandon Clausen, an ex-major league pitcher, who gave it to me as a thank you for throwing batting practice to his Columbus Clipper teammates in 2007. And I think about all the places that white ball has taken me. Thousands of hours of playing baseball in the backyard with my siblings. Thousands of hours of throwing a ball off a school, off a wall, on a street, on a beach, in a park. Over 100 innings pitched in high school. In 1997, I threw out the ceremonial first pitch to a Yankees game. My left arm and this ball somehow, in some way, got me to the University of South Carolina. We're in 2000 and 2002, we were SEC champions. In 2002, we went to the College World Series. This white ball somehow got me to Somerset, New Jersey, where I am now, the bench coach for the Somerset Patriots. In 2008, 9, and 15, we were Atlantic League champions. I am so thankful that throwing a baseball has nothing to do with how quickly I get dressed. Good evening, arena sold out with doubters. I stand before you completely empowered. I'm so excited to hear the volume of silence coming from this room. You have the bat and I have the ball. Double or nothing and once and for all. This battle, it wasn't close. You thought me a loser, and guess what? You misdiagnosed. I pull into the parking lot. My mind drifts off. I imagine myself sitting on a beach, and I wake from a deep slumber. And this time I have to get up. And no, it's not because the iPad mini alarm went off. People, I have to go pee. I look behind me, and I see my parents' beach condo about a quarter mile away. I look in front of me. I see the ocean just feet within my grasp. I stand up, of course, my knees kiss together, and I say, well, the whole world's a bathroom. I pull in. I get out. Left leg first. Each step carries with it. So if you could just take me home in this first part, could you please say the word step between every line? It's being recorded, so I can be loud. So just start off by saying step.
Step.
Your idol no more.
Step.
Pick yourself up off the floor.
Step.
Get up out of your seat.
Step.
You will not lie there in defeat.
Step.
In mind and body of winning tranquility.
Step.
Without movement, there is no possibility.
Step.
Each pace equals a seed.
Step.
In the world's largest sequoia tree.
Step.
One by one, they'll amass.
Step.
Chlorophyll passes down victory path.
Step.
Give yourself a hand. Step. That was part one. Part two. I approach the entrance of the school when I see myself in the door's reflection. And I am amazed that no matter how old I get, I'm a man, 5'8" tall, and I have never, ever bought a pair of pants that fit me. I'm also amazed that when I open the door for a series of female colleagues, at how many bags they're carrying. About how many bags do you ladies walk into work with every day? Is it more than one?
Yes.
Raise your hand if it's more than one. Raise your hand if it's more than three. That's, I know Ms. Karen, and three is probably a low end number. So, Karen, what's the amount of weight you think you come to school with every day on your arms? 5-10 pounds. 5-10 pounds is like a quarter of my body weight. You see, to me, walking without anything is a conscious act of will, and the word without rings in my head because I know. The less I have, the more worry-free I am. I walk into the school, and negative aspects of my high school experience ring in my head. I hear things like, crippled creep, and you don't look like a senior. I see so many kids trying to be cool, and I know in that moment, my main job, regardless of what curriculum and content I am ordered to teach, is to make those kids understand that from the moment they were conceived, they were genetically designed to be different. So why on earth would you try to act like somebody you're not? Are you trying to stand out, but sure, your twin is out there, no doubt? They wear what you wear and they do what you do. You're carbon copy, nothing new. But let me ask you this. Do they have your tone, your heartbeat, your mission? There's so many similar variables. Remember how you were made. Have no fear. Your individuality is saved. I approached the auditorium. I know it was a place where in the seventh grade, I was chasing around a girl I had a crush on, and I fell flat on my face. I look at my hands. I think of my therapists. Deb, Kathy, Jose, Teddy. You see, they knew that as a kid growing up with CP, I was going to fall every day of my life. It was inevitable. But they knew it was imperative that I get my hands out in front of my body. Because 99.9% of my falls were forward. And these will protect me from any further harm. They've been there. In 1997, when I threw out that pitch to a Yankees game, yep, I fell on the top step of the dugout. Later that year, as a freshman at the University of South Carolina, walking around campus with Brett, I fell while he was inviting me to his family's house for Thanksgiving dinner. And in 2002, during the player introduction to the College World Series, I once again fell on the top step of the dugout. I look at my hands. And I have come to realize that my life has not been about not trying to fall every day. It's about always trying to get back up. And that my life has been less about pain and more about beauty. I enter my room and I see two things in my eye's path. Wires, entangled wires and crumbs. Because my room is full of entangled wires and crumbs. Anywho, I think of my dad. For 17 years, Dad worked in the fire protection business. And I can recall him telling me a number of times, Fox, the number one cause of kitchen fires is?
Wires.
And?
Crumbs.
Exactly. I chuckle. I look out on a baseball field and I think about one time where I could have used some actual fire. It was 1995 and I was playing right field in a JV baseball game. People, it was so cold outside that if I didn't move, I wouldn't be able to move at all. But I had a fire. I had a fire to pitch. I wanted to pitch every day. And in inning number 5 of this game, I got my chance. Coach Urban waved me into the game. One small problem. What was it? What was that, Karen?
It was cold,
but what problem did I have specifically? I can move a little bit. It's not what you think. I had nothing to do with my gait, G-A-I-T. I was good. What was the problem? Jim? Didn't have the right gum?
Glove.
Something about my glove. Jim?
Flexibility.
Yes, in my right hand. My glove hand was frozen shut into a fist, and I was having a very hard time keeping my glove on it. Coach Irvin gave me the ball. I concealed my problem. I called my best friend Luke, our third baseman, over. I explained to him the issue, and he spent about a half minute trying to jiggle the glove onto my hand. But I had a fire pitch. I had to do it. It might be hard to spot talent, but it's harder to spot confidence. Those who have the it, that toughness and abundance. Tell me, who are the ones when they wake up? It's not about their speed, their power, or their agility. It's their mental makeup that we marvel at, such humility. They're at their best when they feel their worst, never they moan, cry, or pout. It's their it, their uncontrollable thirst. About their it, they have no doubt. Ante up. Chips are down. They got him one time and they are lucky. About his it, it has no sound. Next time around, he's the goods. He's the money. Is it in his food? No. The it was just my attitude. First period begins. And as I begin to greet my students, I think how much I would love to trade my age for theirs. With one small stipulation. I would not want to be as dumb as I was when I was their age. I can picture myself as a seventh grader walking out of Mrs. Brockett's history class, going to my friend Aaron's locker, and turning the dial. Seven. Go with me, people. Put your hands up and make believe you're turning the locker. Seven. 17. We're going past zero there. Then back to 24. I went into his wallet. I took all the money just so I could have lunch from the school cafeteria. Could you please say retrospect between every line? It always tells the truth.
Retrospect.
Now I see clearly my youth.
Retrospect.
I was young and I was dumb.
Retrospect.
Or maybe just a kid having fun.
Retrospect.
Dear God, why did I wear that hat?
Retrospect.
And dear God, why did I get angry over that?
Retrospect.
Mom and Dad, this place, I'm sick of it.
Retrospect.
Mom and Dad, you're right. Now I miss it.
Retrospect.
I was always looking for something more.
Retrospect.
Now, with the time and the place that I most adore.
Retrospect.
Time goes by way too fast.
Retrospect.
I am so glad to still have a past.
Retrospect.
Thank you. How about an applause to yourself? Does anybody feel like me that life has an unbelievable way every day of saying, I told you so? Anybody feel that way?
Yes.
Yeah. Every day it smacks me in the face. But just through experience. Class begins, and I am a grammarian at heart. It's all about verbs, adverbs, direct object pronouns, indirect object pronouns, but I know that syntax does not equal intelligence, and this stuff doesn't work for everybody. In fact, in this moment, it's not working for anybody because we're all on our phones. We have all been sucked into this technology revolution, including me. But let me ask you this. What good does it do if you're a student and you Snapchat with somebody in China in class, but you've done it for 100 straight days, and because of that, you have no idea your classmate's name in front of you, behind you, to your left, and to your right? Wi-Fi might seem to connect and tie, but it so too began the Great Divide. Social media looks like a brilliant disguise, but anybody with a soul can read between the lines. Cell phones, tablets, and notebooks took the world so forcefully it shook. And with all these new technologies, to the world were born more bad apologies. I step back in the aisle, I slip on a piece of paper, and I fall, this time on my back. I look at the paper. It's today's assignment. It was due 15 minutes ago, and guess what? It's blank. I want to scream, but I can't. I know as a teacher my main job is to be a good model. And in this moment, I have to show my character. And I show my character by getting up slowly. And I get up for those that can't. The bell rings. It's the end of third period. I must step out to use the men's restroom. As I do this, what's happening? Anybody know? I pick my feet up. Just high enough, up off the ground, not to fall flat on my face. I pass a colleague and he says, Fox, how are you doing? Good? I stop and I think for a minute how 95% of this day so far has not gone how I planned it, but on my best day, I have never been all right. So it made sense to me when I said, yeah, I'm doing great. I step into the men's bathroom. It strikes me how much this place looks like the boys' locker room at John A. Holmes High School in Eaton, North Carolina, where in the year 2000, I was an assistant coach for my buddy Stuart Lake in the Eaton Steamers, a team in the Coastal Plain League. That year, I led the league in one category. Let's see if we can guess what category that was. What category did I lead the Coastal Plain League in 2000? Aunt Rosemary, do you have any guesses? No idea. You have a lot of categories in baseball. Don't know. Uncle Fritz?
Pitching.
So let it pitching. I'll say this, they got through the most strikes in batting practice. So that's a fair guess. A little more guesses. What is your name?
Bashi.
Hi, I'm Fox. Nice to meet you. Nice to meet you. So if you guessed, what category? Me neither. I've been playing it my whole life. Any guesses? It walks? If I let it in walks, I probably would have got fired. That's still good. So the category that I led the league in 2000 was getting in full uniform before anybody in the league did. It's true. We had a game that year in Durham, North Carolina. Durham is 5 hours from Eatonton, and the bus for a 7 o'clock game left at 11 a.m. in the morning. And you can bet, by 10:30, I was in full uniform. I passed by my friend Stuart. He said, "There goes Fuff. Fuff. F period, U period, F period. An acronym standing for Full Uniform Fox." I look in the mirror, and I am amazed at the disconnect between my body and my mind. My body, for my entire life, wants to curl up and go fetal. My mind, me, Fox, all I want to do is stand up straight. Another day, another chance. While I adapt, advance, this present tense makes no sense, but out there, there has to be an answer. The bell rings again. It's fourth period. It's the end of fourth period. What time is it?
Lunchtime.
It's time for lunch. I'd love to have lunch within my room alone, but it's far too hot in there. So I decided to take my lunch and make a quarter mile trek to a faculty lunchroom right next to the cafeteria, which nobody sits in, that I love. So I take my lunch and I pick my feet up just high enough above the ground so I don't trip and fall flat on my face. On the edge of catastrophe, a one-time, everyday calamity, God bless my friends and my family, but this gate just does not want to work. So, Ms. Karen, she is our attendance secretary. That's her title. Karen Mack, we applaud Ms. Karen. She's put up with me for the last 12 years. Do you see me on the way to lunch at times? And what goes through your head? Don't fall. So as you can see by that little snippet of poem, that I'm thinking pretty much the same thing, especially when I have my lunch in my hand, because that would be embarrassing, but it's happened before. So somehow, some way, this day, I get to the cafeteria without any problems. And the first thing I do is I look at the food in the cafeteria lunch line. Macaroni and cheese, chicken fingers, French fries, and chocolate chip cookies. And I think about my spastic CP, and I think about one of the great things about it is that muscles shake in my body 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, so that burns calories. And while it may be awkward and painful at times when I have spasms, I'm able to stay thin, a healthy weight, and I've pretty much been able to eat whatever I want. So I think of that food, and I look at my lunch, cottage cheese with and this skinny fat dude throws away his lunch and goes for comfort. Can you please say skinny fat dude between every line? My stomach is a bottomless pit. Sure, skinny. I'll eat that. I don't care about it.
Skinny fat dude.
I can eat more than a horse and throw peanut butter on pizza without remorse.
Skinny fat dude.
In spite of all this food and beer, people, sometimes I turn sideways and disappear.
Skinny fat dude.
But then I lift up my shirt and I'm attacked by the empty sight of my one pack.
Skinny fat dude.
and my muscles when I flex are like wet newspaper.
Skinny fat dude.
So sometimes all the girls say is...
Skinny fat dude.
See you later. Hi, I'm a skinny fat dude. So I have lunch with John. John's been a janitor at Liberty Park for the last 8 years, and he tells me in this conversation he's going into heart surgery tomorrow. A note that in life, anything we have can be taken away at any time. And while I wouldn't bet on anything, if I had to, I'd bet on myself. Lunch is over. I have finished my cafeteria gut bomb. I pick my feet just high enough up off the ground so I don't
fall flat on my face.
I make a right hand turn into the hallway. I'm exhausted. I'm in the middle of a hallway, and I'm being passed by people on my left and on my right. A colleague comes by, slaps me on the butt, and says, "Hey, Magellan, get out of the middle of the road." Why did he call me Magellan? Does anybody know? He was an explorer that got lost. Do that again. Yeah. I think speed limit. I think back in my mind, it's my freshman year at the University of South Carolina. It's a Wednesday morning. I get up. I walk. Past the Roos cafeteria, past Bates dormitory, to the Black Pea Center, where I lift weights. Why? Because I guess I'm a masochist. I go past South Quad after I shower. I go to the Russell House cafeteria, eat breakfast, and go to 4 straight 1-hour classes. Get a bus back to Sarge Fry Field, get a quick lunch, and it's time for me, the team manager, to set up for batting practice. I'm exhausted. Coach Tanner sees me. He knew how to push my buttons. He knew I was exhausted. He said, "Hey, I bet you can't throw the speed limit." In a huff, I grabbed one of our assistants and threw him off the mound. For the record, people, yes, I did throw the speed limit. If, of course, the speed limit is 55 miles an hour. The next thing I know, I'm sitting in my classroom, and it's 2 minutes before sixth period begins. iPad power, 12%. Computer power, 25%. Phone power, 6%. I'm an absolute mess. And then I recall what Robert Andino told me in the batting cage last year. He said, "Fox, we all have screws loose. We've all felt lower than low. We just can't keep the mind shift off the word go. When we're done, all we want is more. Our elevators might not go to the top floor. We've all been neck deep in alligators. When they're right in front of us, there sits the elevator. People, we all have screws loose. Not a few, not many, but all. Because if we didn't, we wouldn't be normal." The bell rings. It's the beginning of eighth period, the final period of the day. And when I tell you my mind is all over the place, my mind is all over the place. 8, 4 more than my older brother's number in high school. 5 more than my younger brother's number in high school. 4 less than my sister's number in college, and 1 more. One less than Bordeaux's number in college. Bordeaux, Ryan Bordenick. He was our catcher at the University of South Carolina my freshman year. That year, the team's bat boy. I would pray that we were in the field and nobody was on base, we would give up a ground ball at third base. That would mean that Bordeaux would go back up first base, losing his mask and skull cap in the process. And I would have to run and pick it up. I love to run. I look at the clock. Time is going by very slowly. And I know my students are looking at it and thinking the same thing. But here's the bottom line. My freshman year in college was 20 years ago. So Karen Tanner was right when she told me, life is short, but the days are long. It takes and it teaches, we see it take away from the bleachers. It passes and amasses, as seen by the lines on my face, on clocks and on watches, the same amount each day allotted. We are late, we are early, and we are hurried by the hands never replaced. As a young buck, I saw my future clear. All these visions of grandeur, oh dear, from penthouse to outhouse, all mine. I get lied to by time. I lift up my right arm and I see a sweat stain on my right armpit. It's very hot in the room. I know below my clothes, below that sweat stain, is a scar in the shape of an X. You see, upon my birth in October of 1978, my lungs collapsed, and I had a chest tube put in me just below my right armpit. So that X, to me, equals survival. I think of Willie. Willie was my roommate at Children's Specialized Hospital in 1990. At 15 years old, Willie stopped breathing, reason undiagnosed. Willie always smiled from ear to ear in his conversations with me. Willie was my brother. A short time after our conversations there, my time there, Willie passed away. The bell rings. I've survived. So have my students. Once again, I think of Willie, look up to the sky. I know we can't buy a lot of things in this life, and we certainly can't buy time. Even though the school day is over, my work is far from done. I stare straight ahead, and what do I see in my eyes path? There's no more students, but what do I see? Thank God, no stairways. I don't go down many stairways at Whitman Park. I see desks, entangled desks, pens, pencils, and papers everywhere. And as I begin to pick up my room, I close my eyes and I picture my room spotless. There is nothing that frees my mind more without a doubt than going through my classroom and throwing things out. Mondays through Fridays, I am free from material prison as I go through my classroom and throw pens, pencils, and papers in their respective bins. I walk along the hallways, and profanity I mutter. I think of my classroom and its endless clutter. But then I look to my left and I smile. I see an accounting class with paper neatly piled. I gave my Christmas list to Mom, and she said, Fox, you need that football like you need a hole in the head. Looking back at my life, doing it again, I'd wake up and suit up and be a garbage man. A pack rat or hoarder I am not, because to me, zero adds up to a lot. I shut the door to my room and begin to walk out of the building. Before I do this, I'm stopped by a student. She tapped me on the shoulder and says, hey, Prof, I read your book in the library. I liked it. I think I'm going to buy a copy. Just when I've lost all hope, I look into the eyes of someone who is the reason that I continue to be a teacher. I can picture myself sophomore year of high school with my head down on my desk, exhausted in study skills class. Then I hear a knock at the door. Mr. Ranger, my language arts teacher, giving me a thumbs up, just making sure that I'm okay. I walk out into the parking lot, people, and what happens?
Pick up my feet.
Oh, I do that, but it doesn't work this time, so what happens?
You fall.
I fall. As I get up, a colleague sitting in her car says, young man, are you okay? To myself, I've never been all right. I get into my car. Right leg first. As I go to sit down, my knees draw closer and closer together. CP is relentless. When it pushes, I pull. When I pull, it pushes. And the absolute truth of the matter is, I have never put the amount of effort into my therapy as I should have. And recently, I met up with one of my therapists for the first time in 25 years, and I told her this. And she said, Fox, you hated me. I didn't hate her. I hated the situation. I'm standing up before therapy. I look down. While I'm standing up, you could fit a matchbox car under my feet. We know what matchbox cars are, right? The eighth grade at Pope John did not know what a matchbox car was yesterday. I think of my curled toes, and I can picture people, it might be you, getting up in the morning and just slipping their shoes on without bending over. Raise your hand if you can do that. Raise your hand if you've done that in the last 3 hours. I hate everybody here. That's another reason why I hate airports, because I have to sit down, put my shoes on, and take them off in the security line. And I'd be lying to you if I told you that doesn't bother me. I get to a mirror. I stand sideways. I see how much my butt sticks out because my pelvis doesn't move, and I swear I could be 3 inches taller. I look down and see my lower leg pointing in one direction, my knee in the other. I breathe my insecurities out and in. But here's the bottom line. I could let all this pressure bust my pipes, or I could use it to build a diamond. I choose the latter. I'm that annoying cough you just can't kick. I'll piss you off and I'll make you sick. I'll test your will and your character. I'm that weighted test that really matters. I'll turn a 5-minute walk into the sun into a second-to-second fog-ridden manhunt. Hello, my name's Adversity, and I introduce a man to himself. I drive and stare straight forward. I make a left-hand turn on I-287 South, and I think about all the small freedoms I have been able to enjoy throughout my life. And then simultaneously, I think about the times when I haven't been able to enjoy those freedoms. I'm 12 years old. I'm lying in a bed, in a cast, from the waist down. I'm tired, not so much physically tired, but tired of having people do things for me. You see, that's been a hard thing for me to accept throughout my life, even my strongest moments. But in this moment, I can't really do anything. When my nose is running, I have to get somebody to get a tissue for me. When I'm hungry, they have to get my food. When I have an itch on my toe, they have to scratch it. And I told myself, in this moment, I am no longer going to get help from people to get to the bathroom. So I devised a plan. Turn myself so I'm crossing the bed, not lying with it. Turn myself over onto my stomach. Turn myself onto my right-hand side. Crawl myself onto the floor. Clank. Army crawl. Across a rug, onto a foyer, making left-hand turn into the bathroom. I prop myself up on the commode, or up using the commode, hold onto a wall for dear life, and then freedom. I think about freedom and how this, as a teacher, a man, and to my students, is threatened every single day by people who are insecure and try to make others feel bad because of it. What do we call these people these days?
Bullies.
Yes. You might say, well, you might not know a whole lot about that, but I do, because you remember the kid who I said before told told me that I didn't count, he's dead. He hanged himself because his girlfriend told him that he didn't count. Hmm. I'm going to give you what you want and I need. That's the truth. Bullying is not hard. Just take something different about somebody and dwell on it. Well, we're all different. You can do it about things that don't make sense. I was told once that a song was bad because I was listening to it. It's also done about the obvious. Someone a short time ago who's known me for a long time said, "Dude, your eyes are messed up." And I said, "Yeah, they've been that way. What are you, blind?" A note to bullies. You may still have. You have no right to make others feel bad. A note to the bully. They are under no obligation to be their friends. But both parties have a right to their feelings. So get help. Why? Because I do. Even if tough times last, tough people, they last longer. And as you go down that mobile-ridden path, let your faith grow stronger. If you fall off the horse, get up, get back on the saddle. Victory Highway is not smooth sailing. That road is a constant uphill battle. Even if positive thoughts don't work, negative thoughts, they'll kill you. Keep your mind, your body, your soul on high alert. You will never know the heights you take yourself to. So keep one hand on the wheel, one foot on the gas. The struggles you'll face, they are real. You can tell them to kiss your ass. Thank you.
Just going to play a short video.
It's me. Come on, baby. You can do it. It should be working.
I just dread. I seem to put a value on my head. My face was the ultimate roadblock.
Yeah. It's an actual song.
My floor is a bottomless pit.
Yeah, you got to give me.
From the desk of a skinny
fat, skinny, skinny fat, skinny, skinny fat, skinny, skinny fat, skinny.
Leaves falling off the trees. Observe. See what you see. Observe. The tantalizing sunset. Observe. Much is far from over yet. Observe.
Brave.
You were the one that prevailed.
Brave.
Create your own rhythm.
Brave.
Doesn't it feel great to create your own microcosm?
Brave.
Whether your pace is slow or fast.
Brave.
Let the air in your lungs amass.
I give it my all and do it to no end. I get up the next day and I do it again. I tell myself before I get started, there is no reason to do this half-hearted. My words, my deeds, my actions, my own, my body and my mind, my home. My effort manifests itself in a soaking lather. In the end, it's my integrity that matters. I sweat, I don't get tired.
Thank you. And I want to thank you all from the bottom of my heart, friends, family, everybody, for supporting me. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
So I wanted to take this time next however long to take any questions you might have. Any questions about me, stuff?
I have a question.
Reverend Frankie?
You don't have to answer it if you don't want to. But I'm curious, when you got emotional,
yeah,
was that like a surprise, or was that about, would you share about that?
Yeah, it's always a surprise, because if I know it's coming, like I'm good. I can prepare myself for it. But what I don't know, like yesterday, I didn't get overly emotional. A couple spots I did, but you know, today I was like,
it was beautiful.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
But it's probably because of the people that are here.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the people here have been on my journey with me at different points. It's just a different kind of energy or attention that I get than I got yesterday from eighth graders. Both, I mean, different, but yeah, I definitely got emotional early on. I was not prepared for that. That's why I almost lost it a couple times. It's a good question, and I'm glad to answer it. Other questions? I don't have anything. Yesterday I said, well, you want to go back to homeroom, guys? How about some more questions? And I kept asking questions. I'm glad. So you approve? You like the message? What did you take out of it?
Well, I sometimes indulge in self-pity and stuff and feel sad, so I like that you said never give up. And
I don't think we have a choice, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's not that I don't indulge in self-pity, but I've realized that it's like you're in a rocking chair. It gives you something to do, but it doesn't get you anywhere. But I'm not to say that I don't complain or felt self-pity, because I do. But like I said in that last poem, even if positive thoughts don't work, negative thoughts will literally kill you. And I'd like to stick around this party as long as I can. Doc, yes?
Who was your teaching role model?
Teaching role models.
Is there somebody that you wanted to emulate when you decided to become a teacher?
That's a great question. I have a lot of them that I admire. Just thinking about if we start early on, kindergarten, Mrs. Metzger, you know, thinking back, I didn't realize it at the time because I was so spoiled. What a talented person. She could get me to sing, and I don't have a singing voice. And she was a great, like, pianist. She could play the piano. It almost was like she's mouthing the line to you, and she's playing the piano, but her fingers are not on the keys. I mean, she was like, it was like magical like that. And then going into middle school, Mrs. Brockett, my seventh grade history teacher, the one whose class I snuck out of to steal my friend Aaron's money, she introduced me to the word integrity. Which is doing what is right even when nobody's watching. And I failed at that in her class. High school, obviously my high school baseball coach, Doug Chambers. My English teacher, Mr. Ranger. My Spanish teachers, Mr. Adi and Mr. French. In college, Dr. Fryer. I'm just going through names. And they're just people that have taught me things. Dr. Irizarry, Dr. Atkinson, he told me a great story. I took this class, History of Africa to 1800. Oh. And the content was brutal, but this was a guy, just an accomplished man, who told us on the last day of class just the times in his life when he was in Africa visiting, and he's fighting for his life because he's gotten involved with people he shouldn't have gotten involved with. And just some of the stories were amazing. So yeah, my teachers and coaches, those are some of the names that I've taken a lot from that are up here with me. It's a good question. Thanks, Tom. What are your other questions? I'll phrase it like that. What are your questions? Implying that you do have questions. Teaching technique. Yes, Jim.
So you mentioned that you spoke for some eighth graders yesterday up in sort of North Jersey. How are you incorporating your new speaking career with teaching Spanish in high school?
So yesterday I took a personal day. And I knew it was PSATs, and they had PSATs. And a good friend of mine is up there. I wanted to see him. So it worked out where I only missed two classes. And it was a beautiful day. So went there and spoke, and it went really, really well. It's a couple of things that I didn't do that I wanted to. I didn't play the slide presentation. At the end, I was like, doggone it. I wanted to get a picture of everybody. I didn't. Then I got in my car and I said, it's a beautiful day, and I've got this gift card from my brother and his wife to the Shake Shack. So I'm going to ride over there. So I went over there just to see, you know, the ride up there to Sparta is pretty nice. Foliage on the trees. So it gave me a different perspective. And like I was saying to about one kid with a cell phone there during the presentation. So it was nice to be exposed to something different. And where we are, Open Park, cell phones, they're allowed and they can help students, but we're so reliant on them. And I'm in that category. But it was refreshing to see students with their world out here and not in here. Yeah. Other questions?
I have another one.
Frankie, yes.
I think your presentation is really amazing. You have a real gift of combining your story with the poetry and public speaking. Really, it's really beautiful. I can see you do this all over the world. It's fantastic.
Thank you. That's kind of what I want to do.
Yeah.
And I searched on ways to do it. And like I said, until Greg told me at my brother's wedding, Fox, they're wondering why it takes you 4 times as long to get up on stage. So tell her about it. And then I went to San Diego to visit him and my sister. On the flight back, I'm like, it's about time I do something. So I wrote that first piece starting with the iPad mini, and I'm like, okay, I'm on to something. And I realized that it kind of just comes out because I've been writing this story my whole life. Instead of having memorized an entire poem, I'm talking about my life. And so on car rides, that's when I practice. You know, I don't sit at home in my bed this line. No, I just take a ride and, okay, turn the radio off, folks on the road, and talk to yourself. And I'm a guy who likes being alone, and my mother tells me I have a committee in my head, and she's right. So I'm using the committee in my head for your own benefit.
Have you taken any courses or coaching for public speaking?
So I'm part of the PSA, Public Speakers Association, and the woman who runs it, Tanya Hoffman, has been great. For me, she's coached me up a lot. Can we just say thank you, Tanya, on three, because it's going to be recorded.
Yay. So,
yeah, give it a clap for Tanya. Thanks, Tanya.
Thanks, Tanya.
Yay. Good job, Tanya.
So she's given me a lot of opportunities to speak. So within that, she's kind of saying, okay, you see how that works, Fox? You know, don't give out your email account because your account is cheap. And when you certain business things and how to present. She's, through all the opportunities she's given me, she's teaching me how to become a better public speaker. So yeah.
Great.
Good questions. Yes, Jim.
And maybe indulgent enough to ask, is there going to be some more poetry in the future?
Yes, there are more poems, and there's another book that's written. I just want to incorporate my more of what heard into that. So it'll be stories with parts of the poem sort of in between them, and hopefully more drawings by Stephen as well. So yes, that's definitely in the works. Thank you for supporting me all this time. I appreciate it. Some of the stuff that you do is amazing, and I'm sort of jealous of the owl that you took a picture of or the fish. I mean, you seem like you can catch fish
with
your bare hands.
The fox.
Yeah.
You shot.
It's unbelievable. But yeah, those are inspirations for poems too, so keep firing them out there. But yes, it's on its way. On its way. Other questions?
It's not a question, it's just a comment. I remember when you came into the school, the day you were interviewed, you were sitting in the office, and we were goofing around, and you were laughing hysterically at us. And I just want to say, I'm glad you're with me.
Thanks. I like to laugh a lot. But humor, yeah. I mentioned her name, my college baseball coach's wife, Karen. She's been a great mentor for me. Just, you know, things she's told me have stuck with me, right? Life is short, but the days are long. And she's always told me, you know, about relationships with people, that humor is a very good weapon.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes I do laugh to keep from crying.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm sure you do too. Have you done that? Yeah. So we do that when I'm thinking about it. Others? Yes, in the back. What is your name?
Don,
it's nice to meet you.
Pleasure.
Move forward.
I find your entire presentation moving and inspirational.
Thank you. That's the whole goal. I appreciate it. It's just what I go through every day. And I'm not like super like cheery Mr. Positive, but I hate watching television. So I want to get up and move. Like tonight, I'm going to go walk around the complex with no, like, with a dark shirt on. Because I'm dumb and motivated. If that makes any sense. Because I like it. And I'm one of those people too, I'm sure. When I look at myself, I can't believe that I look like that. I feel like I'm just kind of walking on the moon. But then I see myself and I'm going like this. Who is that guy? And people come by when I'm walking sometimes and say things, awesome compliments like that. Okay, I'm doing the right thing here. And I can recall even in college, I would go run the track after games. And my fifth year there, an athlete that I admired for a long time was there working out. He just grabbed me and said, "What you said. Just keep doing what you're doing." It was at a time where I was tired. So I appreciate those things very much. Thank you, Tom. Thank you.
When you get tired, you were saying a few times you get tired. What does that feel like? Is it a physical thing? Is it cerebral palsy? Is it medication? Or what makes you tired?
So take a towel. And you know how you make a rat tail out of a towel? That's sort of how my body feels. It's just entangled. I want to just kind of go, get out of this. Get out of this. It's like a web that I just can't get out of. And standing for long periods of time, especially on concrete, I just get stiff. I feel like I'm a brick. I can't pick up my feet, or it feels like that. It's never seamless. It never floats. And the only thing that heals it is rest. And I don't like to be idle, so it just doesn't seem to work together. I need to find something to do where I'm moving, but not running around. But it doesn't exist. So Debbie was my therapist growing up, probably about 5 years old on, 4 years old on. So
Two and a half?
So from the time that I started to try to get on my feet, so that picture by that easel, that you were probably around there at some point. So, but that's true. You were the first person that taught me to put my hands out in front of me. So when I've fallen in school before, and a colleague told me once, "Boy, you're really graceful." I'm like, "That's because of you."
That's true. I didn't know that about you, Dad.
That's true. Yeah. Yes, I have. And what really helps are like one-on-one sessions. I did Dawn Yoga at Madison years ago. And those one-on-one sessions where she would actually step on my toes, step on my sacrum. I mean, I got taller in those days. But the classes themselves,
you need too much adaptation.
Yeah, it's just, I can't keep up. I just can't. What do you think of acupuncture? I'm not gonna go there, but yeah. I mean, I'm on my
Anybody
feet.
Else?
I'm
Anybody
on my
else
feet.
Yeah.
Would that be good for my?
I don't know. I did acupuncture and it didn't quite work for me, but I do all holistic health and healing, and there's a lot of methodologies out there that are great. I think you have to explore them, and I would talk to an acupuncturist.
Or a physical therapist that I know. It's a new technology that's just being known. It's called dry needling. They get right to the nerve. And the way he explains it, it resets the muscle. It resets the muscle to a lot. And people going for physical therapy for 6 months, they do dry needling. It's like a miracle thing. The best way you could describe it is like acupuncture, but it's beyond that. It's a new technology of physical therapy.
Thank you. I didn't know that informational.
I just learned it this year myself. Dry needling.
Not tomorrow,
though. Gotcha. What I really need is somebody to pull my feet and pull my hands at the same time. And that's what I really feel like I need a lot of times.
Well, that's great.
Just a crack, and then like, okay, I'm a bit better. But no, I get around fine, but I'm always trying to explore ways to be more efficient. So, any other questions? Again, thank you. It means a lot to me that you're here. Thank you for your support from the bottom of my heart. I had a blast. I hope you did too.
Thank you.